My name's Michelle Tom. I'm the new chairman for the Emergency Medical Care Committee. If we could have the members, starting with my right, just introduce themselves and their affiliation.
I'm Phil Davis. I represent the Ambulance Association of Orange County.
My name's Ron Blau. I'm appointed by the First District Supervisor.
I'm Nick Annis. I represent the Third District.
I'm Ken Miller, the Assistant Medical Director of Orange County EMS.
Tammy McConnell, Orange County EMS.
Sam Stratton, Orange County EMS.
Michelle Tom, Society of Emergency Medicine.
Wolfgang Kanabe, representing Orange County Fire Chiefs Association.
John Gilway, 4th District Board of Supervisors.
Sharon Hoyer, Orange Coast EMS, ENA.
Paul Hennessy, Police Chief, UC Irvine, representing the Orange County Chiefs and Sheriffs Association.
Patrick Powers, representing 2nd District Board of Supervisors.
Kim McFarland, representing the Hospital Association of Southern California.
Thank you. If the members could review the minutes, and I can get the minutes approved from the last meeting.
Move approval.
Second.
Thank you. The minutes have been approved. Let's move further to the next item, which is the OC EMS reports.
And I'll start that with the medical director report. A couple of items. The FASTMAG trial, it's a trial of magnesium sulfate for potential salvage, if you will, or to improve stroke outcome was completed. The results were announced a couple weeks ago at an international conference, and the results were not positive. They were not negative. It showed that magnesium sulfate did not provide a benefit nor do harm. So that trial is now being prepared for publication, and along with a number of other publications. One thing the trial did show, and which really brought international acclaim, was that in the field, it is possible, it was shown that safely a drug that in the future can be identified and developed would be feasible for administration by paramedic crews. Just a little background on the magnesium. It probably would have entered into medical practice in EMS without the trial because there had been prior animal and human studies that were suggestive that magnesium sulfate in acute stroke was beneficial. In fact, all the trials published up to the point of doing this trial, which was a randomized controlled trial, it's actually the highest level of research that can be done in medicine. Anyway, up to the point of this trial, it was very positive, but this trial showed no definitive benefit. So I'm happy to announce one, FASTMAG's over. It was disappointing, but it actually proved the benefit of science in EMS in particular. Going up on the Orange County EMS website at this time are the 2014 standing order and medical policy revisions. They include the EMT scope of practice. Primary addition there are hemostatic dressings, which are well, technically have been used in military actions, and we're moving those into civilian use. They help improve clotting of external bleeding wounds. The advanced life support inventory has been revised and updated based on input from the Drug and Equipment Advisory Group. And base contact and transport criteria have been updated also. Probably the biggest change in the base hospital contact transport is that a hospice patient who is being transported, if they deteriorate while they're on the way to a hospice, it's usually from a hospital to a hospice, that they're to be the transport is to be continued to the hospice rather than returning the patient to an emergency room. We have a couple of pilot studies that are active at this time. One is the administration of out-of-scope emergency drugs. The most two of them are common, diazepam, which can be given rectally to a child in seizure, and hydrocortisone for a condition called adrenal insufficiency. Those are not in the scope of practice for California, and we actually, Dr. Miller to my right, submitted a proposal to the state, and we are currently doing a pilot on those, on administering those drugs in emergency situations based on a predetermined consent by, if it's a child, parents, if an individual, their consent in a standing physician order from their primary physician. The other active trial in process right now is community paramedicine. And I'll take a few minutes and have Dr. Miller go over that real quick.
Now. That means now. Okay, got it. Back in 2013, the California EMS Authority and the California Office of Statewide Healthcare Planning and Development, I think I got that right, OSHPD, began a trial project with applications across the state for various versions of community paramedicine practice. Orange County applied through the Orange County Fire Chiefs Association with a proposal using from three cities, Fountain Valley, Newport Beach, and Huntington Beach, to explore the safety and efficacy of alternate destinations for the lowest acuity EMS patients being transported now to, in the study to urgent care centers as opposed to acute care hospital emergency departments. So that's been going forward. The status so far is the decision-making protocols are under development, pretty far along at the moment. There is the curriculum for training education under development. The consent process is being worked through. That's collaboratively between both Orange County and the state of California. Data collection is a key portion of this, and we're able to use the some key advantages of our OC meds and EPCR process to get that done. So that's a powerful tool to facilitate data collection to really understand what's happening in these kind of studies. Funding is still being sought for various aspects of it. And the general timeline now for the beginning of patient enrollment is January 2015, with the rest of this year being these other things I just mentioned. So it's interesting. It'll be an interesting project. The steering committee is, I think, finding its ground and beginning to work through these difficult issues. So by the time we're ready to enroll, we should have something that will contribute to the knowledge of EMS, hopefully, you know, the progression for our practice locally.
Great. And one final thing, and whoever's in charge of the slides, if they're preloaded for the IFT ALS report.
Go ahead. You got it.
Actually, I guess it's later in the agenda, so I'll do it then. Okay. Sorry, Eileen.
It's okay. We should add that it's that's there. Okay.
Okay.
We'll stay there.
The continuing with the so we'll do that a little bit later, Eileen. Continuing with the EMS report, I'll turn the podium over to Laurent Rapace for the OC Meds report.
Morning. I'm going to go ahead and just direct all of your attention to your agenda packet. I believe that it is attachment 2 for the monthly OC Meds newsletter. Just to report, we're pleased to report that we're currently running at 98% electronic ever since December of 2013. So that's a monumental task. We basically went from next to nothing in January and all the way up to 98%. So we were able to go live in about a year. Beginning February 18th, we started a electronic base hospital report pilot program. Hogue is the base hospital who is participating in this pilot. The intent behind the EBHR program, as we call it, is to provide a interoperable software program that works with the EPCR so that the MICNs at the base hospitals can communicate with paramedics, receive information from the paramedics in the field, and be able to document their orders. Their medication orders, their procedure orders, as well as their destination orders. So we're working through the bugs with this and more to come. We anticipate that the EBHR will be live countywide by August of this year. In addition, our licensure program is working really well. We have all of our EMTs currently applying online for their certifications. We also have all of our MICNs applying online for their certifications. We anticipate that paramedics will soon be applying for their accreditations online, as well as services, ambulance companies, ambulance vehicles, and facilities, all starting their processes entirely online through an electronic process. A major enhancement was added to the system on February 1st, whereby EMTs who applied for their accreditation are no longer issued a plastic card. They actually have a virtual card that they can access via an app on their mobile phone. And we have a registry or a public lookup feature whereby providers can actually look up individuals who are accredited throughout the county to validate that they are actually certified. So no more plastic cards out there. We're one of the first government entities to do that. So they can actually use their mobile phone to display that. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Thank you. EMC correspondence?
We received a written correspondence at the beginning of this meeting from Mr. Wontrowski. And Mr. Wontrowski, would it be okay if we held that to public comment, or would you like to?
I was anticipating public comments. I'm fine with that.
Okay. So we'll put that. That'll come up on item 9. Thank you.
EMCC Advisory Subcommittee and Advisory Group reports.
Unless any of the subcommittee members are present and would like to make a report, Orange County EMS would ask that that be agendized for the next meeting. The most important subcommittee action is the Facilities Advisory Committee, and we have their recommendations to take action on later on under item number 7A.
Okay, seeing that there's no other comments, next item, the 50-day public comment period on OCMS policies and procedures.
And for that, I'd like to ask staff Michael DeLobby to address that issue.
Okay, so in your agenda packet, as attachment number 4, are public comment responses for 20 policies that were put out for 50-day public comment from a period of October 29th to December 17th. We assimilated those comments into one document and provided OCMS responses to each of those comments from the public. We anticipate two of those policies will be brought back in, revised, and then placed back out for public comment for a 15-day period. And then the rest of the policies will be finalized and put into effect April 1st.
Thank you.
Let me, I have to find it. There was one typo I noticed as I was reviewing this again this morning. One typo in the EMS response. I'll have to find it, and then let me take a second, see if I can.
Are there any other comments or concerns by the committee members? Okay.
In the interest of time, I'll try and identify the typo and make sure that before the meeting's over that it's corrected for those who want to look at those comments.
Thanks. Thank you. The next item is the IFT ALS program update.
Okay. So I believe in October I was directed by EMCC members to present a six-month follow-up report on the IFT ALS program, and the slide packet that I'm using is in your agenda. The IFT ALS program has now been in effect approximately a year, and the program has undergone changes based on comments received at this meeting and in other public forums. The major change in the program occurred early on. The program was originally identified as one to transport patients between facilities, and there was debate and confusion as to whether a facility transport was a acute emergency patient that should be a 911 call versus a routine interfacility transport that needed advanced life support monitoring. And at the suggestion of a number of community, those interested in the community, the program was transferred or moved to one in which the transports occur, again, primarily interfacility, and I'll show that data in a second, upon a physician's order or a transport that is already prearranged by a medical care provider. The program was developed to provide timely response and safe transport of ALS patients or ALS level patients, primarily patients needing advanced life support monitoring while being transported between one site and another, and based upon a physician's order again or arrangement by the medical care provider. And primarily this involves cardiac monitoring of patients, and I have some data on that also in a subsequent slide. Transport is provided by approved ambulance companies, and they are equipped and staffed for the ALS monitoring and intervention, essentially using the equivalent of our ALS inventory, which was recently updated. And the ALS personnel are California licensed paramedics who are also accredited locally at the present time. And there is a policy 778. They also are required to have credentialing that is appropriate for a program that does advanced life support monitoring. Includes ongoing certification in advanced life support and pediatric advanced life support, or another program, PEP, which is equivalent. So the biggest question this committee had was how is the program performing? At the October meeting, there were data that were presented that showed the program had been functioning as expected using predetermined indicators before the program was started, and the program continues to function at or above the expected performance levels that were determined prior to onset of the program. The advanced life support interfacility program is purely a offline standing order program. So one of the things that we are concerned with is standing order fallouts or lack of adhering to a standing order. And of 1,922 cases that have been transported between the beginning of the program last March and December 31, 2013, less than 1% of the transports have resulted on our review with a standing order fallout. Our criteria prior to the program was less than 2%. And treatment outside of the standing order protocols, which would be, we would consider extremely dangerous, is zero out of those 1,922 cases. The program obviously is designed to pick up a patient who may be unstable and transport that patient to another location, again, inter-facility. So one measure is that patient picked up and delivered in a stable state at the receiving facility. And we found in our data analysis of all 1,922 cases that stable arrival at destination occurred 99.7% of the time. Interventions that occurred, I'll address in a few minutes in another slide. There was one cardiac arrest during transport. This was early on in the program and has been discussed at two or three prior EMCC meetings. We also had a respiratory arrest occur during a transport. The patient was managed with that respiratory arrest and did arrive at scene and had no untoward outcome from the respiratory arrest because they were being monitored by the ALS crew, who was able to intervene with ALS procedures and interventions. Dispatch to arrival time, the program was designed not on fractiles but on average times. And the reason it was designed on average times was to allow for statistical analysis of the data to determine precision of the data. So the dispatch to arrival time for 1,922 cases over a period of approximately 10 months is 25.5 minutes, and the standard deviation is 13.9 minutes. So essentially, the average 25.5 minutes meets the criteria that were set up for the program, which was 30 minutes on average. At the suggestion of community members at a prior EMCC meeting, fractile times were argued to be better. So the better measures, if you will, for comparison to other programs. So your fractile times, 83% of the time, response from dispatch to arrival on scene was less than 30 minutes, and 90% of the time, response or dispatch to on-scene time was less than 38 minutes. There, actually, for IFTs, there are no national standards for those numbers, but they're there for evaluation. Within the program, there's standard policies and procedures for the dispatch of the 911, the IFT ALS provider dispatch center to roll calls over or turn calls over to 911 if the caller calls and it's a obvious acute case that should have a quicker than 30-minute response. And our original data was showing that approximately 9 to 11% of those calls, up to 17% at one time, were being transferred to 911. Now that the program has matured, and in particular callers are beginning to understand what can be done with a program, the referral to 911 is running about 8.4%. So 8.4% of all the calls coming in 8 out of 100 are turned over to the 911 system rather than the dispatch of an IFT ALS unit. And also, advanced life support or paramedic level care is limited by scope of practice and interventions under state health and safety code and paramedic regs. So a number of the calls have to be upgraded even though the caller is asking for a paramedic. And 10.2% of those calls were upgraded to a critical care nurse transport. There had been prior concern expressed then in meetings that this program was going to replace the critical care nurse transport system that's already been in effect in the county for many years. In fact, it has not replaced it. Those calls are referred up. So essentially 18.6, almost 20% of the calls are triaged away from the IFT ALS program, either to the 911 system or to critical care nurse transport. One problem we're beginning to discover is the non-ALS IFT providers, the primary BLS level providers. We have received a number of complaints recently that they are dispatching BLS units for ALS level calls now that we've defined what an ALS level call is, then and then attempting in an unsafe way to transport those patients. So one of our future quality improvement projects will be to begin to explore inappropriate BLS transport of ALS level patients, because through this program we've defined precisely what the levels should be for transport safely of patients between facilities. This bar graph gives the volume of calls by month that have been conducted in the county since March 18th of last year when the program was instituted. What are the transport characteristics? Essentially, what are the largest types of cases that are transported? This slide shows a breakdown of the top five transport criteria or characteristics that are transported, and accounts for 61% or 1,172 of the 1,922 cases. The most common transport levels are weak and dizzy, and respiratory, cardiac, neurologic, and abdominal pain. And again, these are the top five. There are many others, including even the interfacility transport of a snake bite victim that where the original facility had run out of anti-venom and the patient needed to move to another facility for anti-venom in a medical procedure called fasciotomy. I might say also on these transports, I don't actually have it in the data, but it is not uncommon for patients to be transported from a Orange County facility to a out-of-county facility, and most frequently transported to UCLA or to Cedars-Sinai. These are often patients that are transplant patients being transported for transplant services that are not available in Orange County. So these transports occur not just within Orange County, but patients that need monitoring are transported to tertiary centers that have services not available in Orange County using this system. The interventions, the 10 most common ALS interventions, cardiac monitor is most common, and pulse oximetry next, and that illustrates that these are patients being transported for monitoring. Intravenous access and normal saline fluid challenge is high on the list, and in our analysis of patients being transported under this system, the most common condition that deteriorates during transport, and this really hasn't been recognized very much in EMS, but we're beginning to recognize it as well as other systems that are developing these more advanced IFT programs. Anyway, the most common condition is worsening of sepsis. We're finding that patients who are in early sepsis, who actually haven't dropped their blood pressure or need fluids, at times during transport will enter a condition called shock, require IV fluids. So we're beginning to understand a whole aspect of transport and emergency medicine that really hasn't been well recognized in the past because the data hasn't been there and the concentration of interfacility transport patients hasn't been there to make those determinations. What is the origin of call for the service? The most common origin of call, actually it's hospitals and skilled nursing facilities, hemodialysis units, and other licensed units. Our most common origin of runs is hospitals, and this was designed in part to offload hospitals, in particular nursing homes, emergency departments, who may have a patient who's ready to go to a nursing home rather than admit, get them out, and free up the bed. So in an effort to address overcrowding in emergency departments and move patients to a more stable, appropriate situation, that was one of the reasons for this program. And as you can see from looking at this data, it still remains, even though it's now physician and medical provider directed, it still remains an interfacility or IFT program. Curiously, there's another group, 5% other, and these are most common. In fact, it breaks down 2 to 3%. In exploring these are hospice patients who need transported for possibly a gastrostomy tube or something like that, placement from a home situation there where they're in hospice, or a home health situation where a nurse is on duty and calls the program because a patient needs some type of procedure that the home health nurse is not able to do. So we're able to also offload the home health system to some degree and provide hospice care or transport for hospice patients that would otherwise not be available at least at this level, because I'm sure many of you are aware that if you access 911 and enter an emergency department through the 911 system with hospice, then your hospice status is reviewed and potentially you would lose that status. And I think we can wait for public comments and all, but that concludes my 6-month follow-up presentation on IFT-ALS. With this presentation, after we've reviewed the data and explored the program, we currently have 4 applications in the office for companies that are interested in providing this service. Orange County EMS will now begin invite those applicants to continue with the application process. So we expect to probably have 3-4 providers within the county providing the service, probably 2 at the minimum, unless there are any objections or contrary votes by the EMCC. Thank you.
Thank you, Sam, for the update. Do any of the committee members have any questions or concerns based on the data that Dr. Stratton presented?
Go ahead.
Dr. Stratton, thank you. Good report. I just have a couple of quick questions, clarification, and I apologize. I know you've been at this for a while, so I don't mean to drag you back over ground. The 8%, which is referred to 911, can you characterize whether those are coming out of the licensed facilities or the hospital setting? Because I'm imagining the person ordering the interfacility transfer is the treating physician. So, you know, I'm curious which of the facilities are making that mistake most frequently.
We our gut feeling originally was that it was the licensed facilities, but it's about 2/3 licensed facility, 1/3 hospitals, and not so much emergency departments at hospitals, but we have patients that are commonly transported off of ICU units, mm-hmm. or floor units. Many times the setup is to go for dialysis at an outside unit or for a special procedure at an outside unit, and the patient commonly will be on, will commonly be so unstable that has to be a 911 transport.
Okay. On the thanks. On the referral to the specialty care transport, that's what the SCT?
Correct.
Okay. Is there a difference in response time typically between the ALS transport and getting a critical care nurse assembled? And I would imagine that takes longer or not.
Yeah, the reason, one of the primary reason for starting this system was delay in time to get a critical care nurse available. We were clocking times out to 2 to 3 hours, yeah. For critical patients, situations where trauma patients and neurology patients were having severe bad outcomes because of delays in transport. We have received a proposal from one company to develop a rapid critical care nurse transport system, and they will be presenting in April their pilot proposal.
Is there sort of a moment where I know I can get ALS IFT in 30 minutes, but I think the patient really needs a critical care nurse, but that's 2 hours, so I'm just going to call ALS and cross my fingers?
That does occur. It does occur, and we screen those out. And most commonly, the reason for going to a critical care nurse is that the patient requires during transport a intervention that's not within the paramedic scope of practice. And most frequently, that will be a drug that's infusing intravenously that hasn't been recognized by the state as a scope of practice drug. So that's picked up pretty quickly at dispatch as the patient's description of the patient and the patient treatments needed during transport are described, and then that can be rolled over to critical care nurse.
Okay. And then lastly, once the pilot portion is over, does your office view this as, is this going to be market driven when there's multiple providers, or will you establish exclusive operating areas and for critical care transport and bid those? I'm wondering how you'll manage the multiple providers, you know, need necessity, or have you thought about it? Well, I'm sure you have. I know you. So I'm just curious your thoughts on that.
Actually, the pilot closed at the October meeting, and it's been we're still basically collecting all the data and everything. We currently do not intend to develop exclusive operating areas, and this has been discussed with the state EMS authority, and we didn't explore it through legal channels, but we were advised that this would not qualify for 911 exclusive operating areas unless we totally redesign the 911 system as a whole.
So the intent is that it just be market-driven and...
Correct.
Okay. Thank you very much.
The criteria, though, for a provider to provide this service is quite a bit higher than the BLS service
Understood.
Level.
Understood. Thank you very much.
Any other committee Comments?
Yes. Dr. Stratton, on the 8.4% of the times goes to 911 calls, are we doing anything? I know it was higher before, and we got it down to 8.4%. Are we doing anything education-wise, QA, QI-wise, to try to educate those two-thirds of those assisted facilities, one-third hospitals, so that we can even get it down more over time?
Yes, we are. And one thing, and it's still to be done, one thing that's happened as this education's occurred is that the standing orders that the IFTALS paramedics are under, it was found that they should be posted on our website so that these companies or these facilities could just pull them up. And quite frankly, I just haven't gotten it done yet. So those will be going up pretty soon now that you've reminded me.
Great. The other thing is I know that the LEMSA here has a lot of stuff going on and a lot more work on their plate. Are we looking at any kind of revenue for the LEMSA so they're able to continue doing some of this stuff and the oversights and the QA, QI? Because that seems to be a problem. Revenue, I mean.
Yeah, we just prepared a bill for the city of Fullerton to no, I had to, sorry, Chief Kanabi, I had to take that opportunity to be sarcastic or whatever. Yeah, it's difficult because we are losing staff and pretty much below our core level right now because of retirement and another individual getting a job that will advance his career. So right now it's difficult. It would require fees, and that would require the Board of Supervisors to approve. So at the present time, we have a fee study that was done last year, but there's no active motion on that right now.
Yeah, just concerning that with all the additional stuff that comes on the LEMSA's plate now with RFPs, with the interfacility transport, QA, QI, trying to do all this stuff, and no funding going along with any of it, and you're losing people. How are we going to do that?
Hopefully we'll be able to replace those individuals once those jobs open up for recruitment. But you do bring up a good point. It's in the past we've done a number of pilot projects, and for example, the stroke neurology system was at the time not a core program, but something we could really move into because we had the staff and capability of doing it. I would say at this point in time, we can only handle what we've already taken responsibility to take on. And our core function, we likely, until things stabilize, will not be able to do any more non-core projects without some type of funding, backing, or help in doing it. And there are three or four projects that are being proposed at this time that I've asked either for grant funding to help support us by those who are proposing it, or we just simply have to say we can't do it.
Any other committee comments or questions? Okay, seeing none, let's move forward on the agenda under new business. Specialty Receiving Center designations.
And Mr. DeLobby is going to handle that. And this is an action item too.
As attachment 6 in your packet, you will see a summary report for EMS facility designations. 6 hospitals are presented, some with deficiencies identified during Orange County EMS site surveys. So endorsement considerations are presented in there along with the deficiencies and conditions of those deficiencies for consideration of a designation of up to 3 years.
We need a motion.
We have a motion by the committee for ex- acceptance?
For an action item, shouldn't we hear from anybody? Don't we open it up or not? Because if we take action on it without hearing input.
We could, yeah, it could be discussed, then a motion made, and or a motion made, and then discussion, and then the question.
Okay. I'll make the motion for discussion or comments.
Second.
Okay. Any comments, public comments, regarding the designations or by committee members? Okay. Seeing as there are none, can we have a motion to accept the specialty receiving center designations?
Motion to accept.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Okay. Accepted. Let's move on to the EMS plan.
And Tammy, I'll handle that.
Good morning, Tammy McConnell. I provided the members for your convenience a packet of excerpts from the EMS plan, and I apologize. I believe that you were all sent, and you might not have received the email yesterday of the 300-page EMS plan, so I certainly didn't expect you to read through that. So for purposes of today's meeting, this is not an action item. It's a way for us to make sure that the members have received a copy of the EMS plan that's already been submitted to the state for approval. And this packet contains the executive summary of the plan and then specific standards associated with the exclusive operating area system. Another memo that is contained in the packet is a memo that was sent out to the EMS system on February 6th. And it's a really brief outline, kind of just meat and potatoes of what has gone on over the last 6 months relating to the EMS plan, the exclusive operating area, the OCFA RFP that's now shifted back to healthcare agency. So in essence, what I want to make sure that this group is aware of is that there have been extensive conversations between our office, agency, OCFA, and the Emergency Medical Services Authority on the not just what's going on acutely in the county, but what has gone over in the past 30 years. So what all of those discussions culminated in was a determination by the state that we were required, Orange County EMS, as the LEMSA, to conduct the ambulance RFP process for the 19 areas that are OCFA member cities. Also in your packet for illustration purposes is a map showing those 19 areas. This is a very complicated process, and I will gladly take questions, but the purpose of this is just to provide you with an opportunity to at least try to get a quick handle on what is happening, because as I'm speaking, we are redesigning the system while at the same time submitting our plan to the state, while at the same time developing the RFP that's expected to be released in April. So there are multiple things happening at once. And most of it was predicated on the fact that we had to get our EMS plan up to the state. That was probably the most important thing that was has been expressed to us since December. After today's meeting, the entire plan is going to be posted on the website so that you can access it electronically, and that it will also be accessible to the public. So for the next few months, while we're doing our other work, the plan will be up for review, and we would like to receive input and comments during our subcommittee meetings. I don't know whether or not we will have an action item for this committee at our next meeting. We're playing it by ear. So does anybody have any questions?
Yeah, Timmy, I had a few. I'm on a Cal Chiefs board also at the state level and have talked with Dan Smiley. And one of the things that's sort of disconcerting with the EMS plan is there's no mention of 201 rights whatsoever, at least that I can see. I haven't read the whole thing, but in the summary. And I know at the state level, 1797-201 gives the right or obligation for a city or for a fire department, for a district to provide any kind of ALS, BLS service, transport, non-transport, if they had that obligation or right since 1980, which is a year sooner than 224. And I think there's a huge disconnect between there are certain, there are some letters being sent, I probably received them at the LEMS, I know they were sent at the state level. There's actually a Chapter 13 task force that's dealing with this right now. 1797-201 basically gives these fire departments, the districts, cities, the right to provide that, and it cannot be taken away. There is a statutory requirement, and there is no statutory deadline. The only deadline would be entering into agreement with the LEMSA. And so the 224 is for people that don't have 201. And it's really confusing in the old EMS plan. I think that needs to be discussed. I also need to, you know, EMCC should be an action item just to review some of this stuff. And has letters been sent? I've called Dan Smiley, and he says, well, it doesn't pertain to you. These are 224. And I said, well, we're not designated as 201 according to you, and they say, hey, LEMSA has to designate that. Well, when we try to do something at the LEMSA level, they said you can't do it because you don't have an EMS plan. It's this big catch-22, and it's very disconcerting to OC chiefs. And I mean, some of this, the implications of the our whole EMS system collapsing if we don't do it right. And there is a recognition that there is that public-private partnership. But we really need to look at this critically, and because it's a statute, because it's 201, it needs, you know, there is legal parameters. So just a few comments.
Any other comments for Tammy or questions?
Go ahead. Yes, Dr. Stratton, I don't know whether I'm amused or dismayed by this being here in Orange County over the 30-some years that I've been active in statewide EMS. We were always fairly happy that this wasn't a problem that we were going to agonize over in Orange County. And I do realize that it's a state interpretation, and that it's not something that's easy for you, waters that are easy for you to navigate. So. I understand that completely. At the same time, echoing some of Chief Kanabe's comments, the questions over the construction of the exclusive operating area and who retains, you know, which cities might retain the right to make the decision and which cities do not. While Butte seemed to settle some of those, I think there's still a body of thought that the administrative interpretations of Butte are overreaching the actual legal decision. And so that's the sort of thing that I suppose will be sorted out elsewhere. For us, I wonder, cities like, for instance, say Mission Viejo, they will no longer be able to choose who their ambulance provider is, nor will they be able to set the standards of performance, nor will they be able to deal with any of the economic medical trade issues that, you know, they may feel and have in the past had a strong hand or almost 100% choice over. So, you know, when they look at some of their neighbors, the questions of who's 224 and who's 221 or 201 notwithstanding, there's bound to be, and I just let my colleagues know that this will be fraught with city-to-city moments, and I'm sure we'll all be back to the state again, having that moment over the city's right of self-determination of those things. You're a veteran of Los Angeles County, where these issues were piloted. I know, that's where your hair went away. So I guess I don't really have a specific action item I'd ask, except that I'm hoping the plan will come back before the EMCC, that we'll have time to fully digest and discuss. And I'm sure, you know, I let my colleagues know that this is not a simple issue, nor one that the cities will not feel very strongly about having a choice taken away that they view as an essential, important service that they've had before. So I guess that's the comment. The original 19 OCFA cities will be first to feel the pinch. But looking at the map, I'm supposing that cities like Fullerton, Huntington Beach, Anaheim, and some of those others, other than Brea, will soon have to be rolled into the consideration of what is an exclusive operating area, and that they likely will not be coterminous with geopolitical boundaries. So I guess I'm not banging the chicken coop unnecessarily or expect you to solve it, but I think my colleagues need to know that these are not simple waters to navigate.
Yeah, let me, if I can take the stand, take the podium.
I'm sorry.
Sorry. Had, too many depositions recently over all this too, or EMS. For the entire EMCC, let me backtrack on some history. In 1980, when EMS was being developed in California, actually the rest of the country, there was relative chaos with regard to who could respond and who was responsible, city versus county, for the EMS system. And as Ron alluded to, in Los Angeles, I wasn't there then, I'm not that old, but anyway, there was a Supreme Court, California Supreme Court case that was held that that adjudicated between the city of Lomita and the county of Los Angeles over who had responsibility for providing ambulance services to primarily indigent residents of that Lomita, the city. And within that within the Supreme Court declaration and discussion of that case, essentially, the County of Los Angeles lost the lawsuit, and they're responsible, as is any other county now in Los Angeles, in California, for the overall management of the EMS system. Within the suit, though, the other cities that had joined the case with Lomita essentially expressed their interest in continuing to administer, so we're only talking about administration of ambulance services, and I'll get back to more specifics on that in a second, to administer those. So the court had a declaration that if a city was at that time administering ambulance services, and then continued without interruption, I forget the exact term, without in the same manner and scope, and without entering into a agreement with the county, and it's assumed that agreement specific to ambulance service, that city could continue to administer that ambulance service. And that was entered into the Health and Safety Code. And that was entered under section 1797.201, and that's what 201 means, as we, those of us that are used to the jargon, are tossing it around. So it goes to Health and Safety Code in a case that allows a city to continue without interruption and without interference of the county or the state to administer ambulance services, primarily ambulance contracts, as long as the administration is done in the same manner and scope. Now, what's the same manner and scope is somewhat vague. We have cities where the county has had to come in, and we have three cities now where the county, just in my tenure here, where the county has had to come in and do emergency, essentially to protect health and safety, do emergency arrangements to have secondary backup ambulance services come in. And as Mr. Blau points out, that's going to be very contentious because it likely could go to court. And is that a agreement, or was it the county overstepping? Whatever. Anyway, to clarify things, another case went to the Supreme Court. Actually, let me go back. Lomita decision and the 201 decision didn't totally solve the problem of EMS at the time, because there was a situation, again in Los Angeles primarily, some in San Francisco, of ambulance jumping calls, as they was the term used at that time, where an ambulance would hear a dispatch, and it was usually a fire dispatch, and whether it was the contracted ambulance company or not, multiple ambulances would show up at the scene. It was general chaos at the scene, uncontrolled. And this was occurring throughout the United States. And it went to the federal government, and the solution for the problem, it actually went through the Department of Transportation. And the solution for the problem was that the federal government delegated to the state, each state, the ability to declare antitrust protection for exclusive operating areas within the state, and those exclusive operating areas, through a competitive process, would identify a single provider of ambulance service who was the ambulance provider who had exclusive rights to provide 911 ambulance transport. So am I on the right track, Ron? Okay. And I think the whole EMCC needs to know what, you know, you and I've lived this for 20 years, but Dr. Annis probably is just now hearing about it, right? So we have to have the history here.
Only that the Boulder decision specified that in order to be subject to federal to immunity from federal antitrust, that it be a state action, and that the prior method of constructing the state action was to have the state review the county's approval of the local RFP, and that became a state action because the county was operating as an extension of the state in that purpose.
Correct. So that's the antitrust element of the picture, if you will. And that the system of state-sanctioned, as it's called, antitrust protection for exclusive operating areas was developed. California began to develop those, and it came out of a Boulder. Was that federal court? Fifth Court. Yeah, it was a cable TV case. Well, that actually, we have a waste management case now that's affecting EMS. We probably don't need to get to it today, but anyway, within the health and safety code, that was codified as section 1797.224. It's Health and Safety Code Division 2.5, Chapter 4, 1797.224. So if somebody can rattle that off and they're not an attorney, you can tell that this has been something that's had to be discussed quite a bit. In 224, specifically at that point, when 224 goes in, brings in antitrust protection and exclusive operating areas. And that is a state responsibility, and the state of California delegates that to each EMS operating area, usually a county, although there are JPAs and regions also that can do that. And 224 applied to all cities, but if a city essentially met 201 criteria as of, I believe, June 1, 1981, that city could be grandfathered and then automatically, as long as they conducted their ambulance administration without interruption in the usual way, again, vague, they would be grandfathered, and through the state, after it was established that they met 201 criteria, they would be privileged to antitrust protection also. So that's what Chief Kanabi is referring to with the 201 and 224. The state focuses on 224 because really the statutes don't give the state any input or it's protective of cities under 201. The 224, the antitrust, now pulls the state in and then the counties as subsidiaries of the state government. So where we're at now and what we've focused on with EMS are 19 cities that were administered by OCFA. In 2004, the County Board of Supervisors delegated to the Orange County Fire Authority the ability to conduct requests for proposals and develop contracts with providers in 19 cities that did not meet 201 criteria, either because they were not incorporated by June 1, 1981, or prior to that time and thereafter had already been under the county, what at that time was the Orange County Fire Department. So they had already been subject to the county and obviously had an agreement with the county. So those 19 cities are coming up for renewal of contracts or reissuing, if you will, of contracts for ambulance services. And it's been very contentious. The cities, well, let's backtrack. The county didn't, we didn't go into this with bagpipes and glee and joy. We can provide letters, and many of you have seen them, where I argued with the state from October through February 3rd, including taking a one-day, long-day trip to Sacramento to argue with them our point that the delegation to the fire authority was proper and within the means of the health and safety code, because Orange County EMS reviewed all those RFPs, and once they were determined competitive, we have county council review them. We referred them to the state, and in prior years, the state had approved them. But a court case came up, the Butte County case, which Ron referred to. It's Butte County versus the California EMS Authority, in which within Butte County tried to set up a separate EMS system within the overall EMS system. I believe it's NorCal, which is a region, a lawsuit. The state said no, you can't split a if you will, a EMS system into two. In fact, the state argued we're trying to decrease fragmentation of what already is a chaotic system up and down the state. And the state lost the Butte County. No, the state, basically, I'm going to have to quit talking because I'm confusing myself. Anyway, the Butte County decision, which essentially was heard in appellate court, California appellate court, came down that no, a EMS system has to have a single EMS office designated either by the Board of Supervisors or other equivalent supervisory body. Under a JPA would be the board, if that's how it's set up. They cannot be split. and that delegation of any authority, particularly with regard to antitrust protection by the local EMS agency, is in violation of that court decision, which came out in 2010. So we, Orange County, because we had 19 RFPs coming up, we got to be the first in the state to have to work this through. And on February 3rd, we finally received, after four or five letters exchanged and meetings that went all day long in Sacramento, we were told by the state EMS authority, Orange County EMS, you conduct those RFPs and you issue the contracts, which actually the Board of Supervisors has to do. In Orange County EMS, you monitor those contracts. And not only that, based on a waste management decision in November, only the first or the top bidder for an RFP can be selected. There's no room for discretion, as has been done quite frequently in Orange County in the past. So we're at that point now. So where we're at with all that history is we have until essentially September 1st, we have to have 19 cities covered with half the time that it usually takes to do that job. Currently, as we talked about earlier, empty positions. And at the present, we're seeking resources to accomplish the task and have the support within the healthcare agency to get those positions in trying to accomplish that, with a focus on those 19 cities. Mission Viejo is included in those 19 cities. So, Fullerton, on the other hand, is not included in those 19 cities, nor is San Clemente, Westminster, Santa Ana, or Buena Park, which are also OCFA cities. Those are not included in this go-around. So I guess
Fullerton, Huntington Beach, Anaheim, they're all on the slate for the 2015 assessment that you refer to?
Correct. So, right now, Fullerton, Anaheim, Huntington Beach, Buena Park, and Laguna? Who's the fifth one? I think everyone's aware. Five cities have received letters from the state saying that the state has determined that they are not exclusive, that they have no antitrust protection. And those letters, essentially, we received them cold without any discussion. We haven't had those discussions yet. Now, I notice everybody's glassed over and could care less about what I'm saying, but the one thing is that antitrust protection is key in this situation, and development of exclusive operating areas and ambulance areas or zones is key. Butte County decision, as well as interpretation of 224, is that the Orange County EMS office determines exclusive operating areas, that the state can argue about it, but that actually is delegated to the local office to determine those areas that you're referring to. So we're proposing, and it was quite controversial last night at the Orange County Fire Authority board meeting, we're proposing regionalizing cities and grouping 19 cities into five regions. For a number of reasons, primarily better coverage and better monitoring and better performance measures. But the antitrust for those cities, if we conduct the process appropriately, will be solid. And what antitrust protection does, in fact, this came up with Westminster during their RFP process, which had been approved by the state. They were challenged by a company other than the two that were actively bidding. And because they had already been approved and the antitrust advanced to them, Their city attorney simply wrote a letter to that whoever challenged him, said, we're under antitrust. You know, you can go to court if you want, but we're protected, and that just dissolved away. If a city is not does not have antitrust protection, and a ambulance company request that they be allowed to provide service in that 911 transport service in that city, that city, if it has does not have antitrust protection, then is obviously at risk for the one requesting, even though the city has a contract, the city is at risk of that requesting company going to court and obtaining an injunction that would require the city to give them equal access and opportunity within the city to provide ambulance 911 services. And a city could have two or three then ambulances and have to set up rotational systems and such as that, as well as the court issues. And this is not hypothetical. It did occur in San Francisco. San Francisco, for a couple of years, had to rotate their ambulance provider for 911 on a monthly basis. So we know it can't happen. It has not happened yet in Orange County, we're, because there's so much chatter about this now, that it's likely that this will come to more attention. I think I'll leave it at that and see if there are any questions. That was, for those of you that don't know, I also lecture at UCLA, and so you can see what agony my students go through.
I'll not drag my colleagues over the broken glass that constitutes these issues any longer, but will the EMS plan come back before the EMCC for consideration again?
Good point. For us to conduct the 19 city RFPs, the state demanded that we have the EMS plan up there. So that EMS plan has been submitted, even the Board of Supervisors just received it yesterday. The EMS plan should be discussed in this group, and it needs to be agendized for future discussion and exploration, primarily because this group is our representative of the Board of Supervisors, that we do communicate with them, but EMCC is the Board of Supervisors conduit to EMS. And if there are substantial changes that we need to make to the EMS plan, we've addressed it with the state and already discussed it with our council. We can file amendments at any time. And in fact, we've been filing amendments and updates regularly over 7 years. 7 years. The last plan was 2007. So it needs to be discussed. It's not will it, but it has to be discussed, and amendments determined if they're necessary, and we can then submit those to the state.
Are there any other committee comments regarding the EMS plan?
Yeah, I do. I guess I'm going to be dragging people through the glass here. Sorry about that. But Dr. Stratton, the one thing that's concerning cities like Huntington Beach or Fullerton, Anaheim, is there's no mention of 201 rights. When we received those letters, and I'm speaking for Fullerton and then Anaheim also, is they were the letters were sent under the premise of 224. Okay, and the cities feel that there's 201 rights. If you have 201 rights, you don't need 224. So the antitrust protection is under the 201. Basically, you have the right and the obligation for the engine care, that we do that. So according to the EMS plan, the document, and the state ambulance zones that they sent out, that they put on the website, shows no 201 cities down here, which is incorrect, because according to the EMS Act of 1980 and the 201 rights, it goes back to actually June of 1980. If you've been providing for that service or contracting for it, you have the right and obligation to, as a city, to do that. You don't have to get the state's approval or anything. You give the LEMSA the notification, but your council, your governing body, does that RFP if they want, or if they don't want, they provide their own transportation. So that's the issue right now, is I think it would be really helpful. And when I called the state after I got the letter, they said, well, that doesn't pertain to you because you're a 201 city. Okay, then why did I get the letter? Well, your LEMSA hasn't designated you as a 201 city. When I got the LEMSA, they said, because the state hasn't designated. The state says we don't designate, the LEMSA does. So we're caught in this, and we talked to the attorneys, and that's why the letters went out. So I think it'd behoove us in the EMS plan, or at least the LEMSA, first designate who the 201 cities are and figure out, then everybody else is 224, and then it would be pretty easy to figure out who falls into those. But that's the dilemma we have right now. If we're talking about looking at 2015 for some of these cities or these departments, we already feel we have the right. We should right now be designated as a 201 city by the LEMSA. So if that could happen, that would really help solve this whole thing to a certain degree. The other aspect is the concerns with some of these, if we're not designating these 201 cities, I don't know if any of the three cities that you mentioned that the LEMSA had to come in and take over the ambulance service because of public safety, I don't think any of them were fire departments, were they?
Yeah, well, all we're talking about is BLS ambulance services. We're only talking about BLS 911 transport.
Okay.
So it's not fire departments that we're talking about, it's the ambulance providers. There are no exclusive operating areas for 911 ALS in Orange County, and none of this pertains to the fire departments, it pertains to the ambulances.
Well, it does if the fire department provides the BLS ambulance, and if they have that right. So, for example, the city of Huntington Beach provides BLS ambulances, and the city of Huntington Beach feels they have the 201 rights to do that. Because they used to contract it out to an ambulance company, but the city still made the determination of who the RFP went to, not the state or the LEMSA. It was the city because that was their right. And for example, city of Fullerton. Is from 1980 still had that right, that 201 right. They gave it to different ambulance companies, but the city made that determination, developed that RFP because they had the right to do so by June of 1980. So they have the 201 rights. Brea, Orange City, you know, a lot of them are out there, and I think that's what we need to do at the EMS, at the LEMSA level, is designate those. Because the state is looking for us to designate. They don't want to designate. But right now, all the documentation coming from the state and the LEMSA does not show any 201 cities or departments, which is incorrect because the legislation says there are some.
Yeah, and we're hampered by the Butte County decision that I referred to in 2010 directed the state to identify the criteria for a 201 city. 224, it's pretty obvious. You have to have a competitive regular process. And your Chapter 13 committee, which I understand is a closed committee?
Correct.
Which I have none of my staff or myself have any, we are totally cut out of the loop. So we have no clue what is being discussed there, but we're waiting for the Chapter 13 committee in the state EMS authority to come up with their measures for determining a 201 city. So if you're on that Chapter 13 committee, that's the holdup for us.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's been going on for quite a while, and it might have to go legislative to correct that. That's the downside. But the Butte decision didn't affect 201 city. It didn't affect the 201 health and safety code. Correct? I mean, still the same requirements, providing and or contracting that service by June 1st of 1980 still applies regarding the Butte decision, I mean, with a Butte decision or not.
Correct.
Okay.
If I may add, one part of the Health and Safety Code 1797.201 includes a section that until such time that a contract is entered into by those providers or cities in order to enter into an organized system of care at the county level. It is posted on the Orange County EMS website, Policy 720, Addendum Number 2, which lists all of the cities that have entered into an agreement with the county for subsequent licensure in providing of ambulance services with their communities. And unfortunately, many of the cities, inclusive of Huntington Beach and Fullerton, all entered into an agreement which could be construed as meeting the 201 provision of the Health and Safety Code to enter into an organized system of EMS. So I'd like to bring up that historical fact. The document is available on the website.
And that is correct, but entering into agreement does not waive your 201 rights. It actually solidifies them according to the statute.
Any other committee comments? Okay. Hearing none. At this time,
let me, if I could, the correction that I'd referred to earlier, which directly relates to this, is on page 54 of the public comments for the policies. And the OCEMS response for a, and this is regarding the mass gathering events policy, for areas that are exclusive operating areas, and this is whether an ambulance can transport from a mass gathering event like the kickboxing events and the monster truck things and all. What were our reply to the request from Schaefer Ambulance to transport a patient is that for areas that are exclusive operating areas, the contracting 911 ambulance is the only company permitted to do transport after patient stabilization at the scene. Again, obviously assuming that's a 911 patient. For non-exclusive operating areas, the city may use, essentially may allow the use of an OCEMS approved ALS provider. So that's the opposite side of this picture. So that should say non-exclusive, not non-emergency. That's the correction. So the opposite side of this picture is that if we have an exclusive operating area the designated by the county, we will obviously be in the support of the exclusive operator and protect their contracted ability to exclusively provide 911 transport in that city. If it's not exclusive, we in the city is operating doing their own administration, that's a city issue.
Are there any other committee member concerns or questions regarding anything on the agenda today? Nope. Okay, hearing none.
Oh, public comment.
I'm about to. I would then at this time like to open comments to the public. Regarding any of the agenda items, please keep in mind that your comments should be limited to 3 to 5 minutes. Are there any public comments at this time?
There's the one, Stephen Wontrobski.
Go ahead, sir.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman and fellow committee members. Stephen Wontrobski, Mission Viejo. And I go to every single Mission Viejo City Council meeting. I'm aware of what they're talking about with they call it an original power grab and things like that by the state. Let me give you a little background on my background. I'm a CPA and attorney. Back in October or September of 2012, I came before this committee and told this committee that the OCFA doesn't have any authority to do the RFP for ambulance transport based on the Butte County decision. An appellate court decision. I consider it right on point. Things continued on. I went to the OCFA board of directors numerous times saying, look, you guys cannot do this RFP. Things continued on. I came before the board of supervisors in October, said, hey, look, there's a problem here with this RFP. And the Butte County case makes it illegal for the OCFA to do it, and I've uncovered so many irregularities in the OCFA procurement department, their bidding awards, and other problems there. Technical evaluations are really circumspect. We got allegations, public allegations of bid rigging going on here. I asked for a procurement department outside CPA investigation of what I consider my allegations here, what my findings were. They supported. The OCFA's own CPA supported what I found in a very limited investigation. So here's what happened. Since nothing happened on this, I was trying to go through proper channels. In October, I sent a letter to the state EMSA director informing the director what's going on down here. Number one, on a legal basis, the Butte County decision. Number two, on the CPA, financial irregularity, procurement irregularities, technical bid evaluations, which are really circumspect. You gotta look into this thing here. So what has happened is that the state came back and said Butte County applies. That's number one on a legal basis. Number two, and this is the big thing that people don't understand. Originally, my own city council didn't understand this, but now they do. And I'll give you the letter that explains this whole thing. What the state said, Butte County controls, legal. Okay, then on the procurement end, financial, CPA, accounting, public contract code applies. All right? So if you have a bid and you get the bid results back, and you don't want, if the city doesn't want to select the, what is it, most responsible, lowest, most responsible bidder, they have an obligation to do so. If they don't, they can't pick and choose. They've got to go out and rebid the thing. Okay? What is that? Okay, I can wrap it up. The more important thing is this, okay? This is the letter. What's going to come before you is a recommendation from the OCFA to continue with the kickback rebate business, all right, and put that into your RFP. And they've given support. What everybody needs to do is go to agenda item number 11 on the board of directors for the OCFA last night. Get a copy of what they have as backup documentation for this recommendation, and then compare it, send it out. If there are ambulance operators here, they should do the same thing. And you'll find that generalized statements that are made there to state why we should continue with this rebate kickbacks business, they're untrue when you look at the facts. I went and looked at those generalized statements and then went to the facts. It's completely the opposite. And so what you all, the first thing I'd say is just send this letter back to the OCFA for comment, that's all. And then the ambulance operators can comment on it also. Thank you very much.
I realize it's public comment, but to explain what Mr. Wontrovsky is referring to, because the EMCC may, this may come up at our next meeting, so what currently the, and I'll try and keep this short without making it a lecture, and there will only be three questions to make sure that you got the point after we get done. The current method for OCFA billing is, because OCFA is not a, if you will, a billing entity, a entity that has a NPI number that can bill Medicare and all, and that's partly because of it being a JPA quasi-governmental agency. And the same is true for EMS. The only real financial control over us is has to go through the Board of Supervisors. Anyway, OCFA, if you are have a emergency and you're in an OCFA area, today and a response is made, you will, and a paramedic does an assessment and accompanies you in the, well, does an assessment, you'll receive a bill for BLS services, and a bill for, in combined in that bill is a bill charge for ALS services, and those, that paramedic service chunk of the bill is passed on to OCFA to cover their paramedic and equipment expenses, advanced life support expenses, and that's called the ALS pass-through. And this charge, which it's 289, three. It actually, we approve it every year, or we at least review it here when we do the ambulance rates. This is has become controversial because with the sudden switch from OCFA doing the RFPs and contracting to the county doing the RFPs and contracting, the issue of whether this pass-through should be included in the contract in the RFP or not has become, as I said, very, I don't know if it's contentious, but controversial. And on Tuesday, this issue is going before the Board of Supervisors, and your supervisors may be asking you about it if you're representing a supervisor. The discussion will begin with the Board of Supervisors, who appropriately would make such a decision.
Any other public comments? Hearing none, then we have met the items on our agenda. The next meeting is scheduled for April 25th, the same place at 9 a.m. Can I have a motion for adjournment?
Motion to adjourn. I do have one comment. Is anybody living in or taking Carbon Canyon on the way home? Don't. It's closed right now. Do a SIG alert out there. Do a little mudslide. So if you're from that area. But motion to adjourn.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
We are adjourned.